Hello, my name is Elizabeth Porowski, and I'm the Communications Manager for Alicat Allies. Today I'm joined by the former Director of Operations of the Cat Welfare Society in Singapore and Community Relations Specialist Don Kwa. Don, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Elizabeth.
Community relations plays an integral role in any trap, neuter, return program. In addition to neutering and vaccinating the cats, taking care of the colony also includes educating the human neighbors of the colony. From simply keeping them informed to the situation, to helping them find easy solutions to keeping cats out of their gardens, creating a rapport and a dialogue is really the key. Often, caregivers don't know their neighbors have an issue until animal control has been called or a situation has escalated. Don, what do you consider to be the main points or tips to keep in mind when dealing with the public?
I think the most important thing that people should consider is, as you mentioned, it's important to let your neighbors know that there's someone caring for the cats. A lot of people have no idea that the cats there are being managed. They don't know that the cats there have been sterilized or vaccinated, or they might think the cats are just breeding out of control. I think in a recent case we just dealt with, one of the issues we faced was that someone thought that all the cats belonged to this one lady, and she was letting them all out of her house, and she wondered why she didn't keep them in. So that is probably the most important thing to do. Another thing you might want to do when you start a program, or when you in the course of starting a program, is to let the people who are in charge of the area know. So if you're doing it in a building, let the building management know what you're up to. If a condominium, let the people running the condominium know. Let your neighbors know, as I mentioned, and it might be good to even let city officials know.
Have you had any bad interactions where the property manager maybe isn't as willing to do a trap, neuter, return program, where you've kind of had to convince them that this was the best, you know, in the best interest of them and the cats?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you can always mention to them, and that they've probably dealt with if they've been there for a while, is that if the cats are there, and they've had them removed in the past, they've probably seen the cats come back in because of the vacuum effect. So we've seen many times that people have the cats removed and then the cats are back in. So if you have a property manager who's been there and doing this for a while, if you ask them, you know, have you seen this happen, they'll probably say yes. So one thing I often tell them is try TNR, try trap, neuter, return for a little while. If it doesn't work after a trial period, you can always go back. And very rarely do they do that.
A lot of times, it's the neighbors complaining or neighbors' concerns that actually sparks these things. At Alicat Allies, we recommend buying certain deterrents or things like that. What have you had the most success with?
I love the scarecrow. I think the scarecrow is great because, honestly, as you know, a scarecrow works on a motion sensor activated control. So if a cat or basically anything moves in the garden, the water sprays and the cats stay out. Now that's not necessarily the best solution for everyone because you might not want water spraying all over the place. There's also the cat stop, which emits a high frequency pitch that only cats can hear. And again, that is motion sensor activated. That's very useful. Of course, we can use the cat scat, which you can put in the garden so that cats don't dig and defecate, which is the main problem most people have. Another thing you can do is use sticks, like little ice cream sticks, so that cats don't dig in the area, stones, orange peel. There are like so many things you can do. A little bit of, you know, creativity actually goes a long way.
And I've found that some things work in some areas.
Right.
Some cats are repelled more by one thing than another. So it's really a trial and error. It's not something that you try something and then give up and
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely. I think it's a long process of, as you said, trial and error. And don't give up. One thing doesn't work. Try something else. And you may find, it might take you two or three times till you find, you know, what works for you. Like one caregiver I knew, she used to have one particular cat that always went to a neighbor's house. So every evening she would actually trap it, put it in the bathroom, let it go into the litter tray, and then she let it out.
Oh, wow. That's involved.
That worked, though.
Alicat Allies has posted on our website sample agreements and information for when you give cat stops or scarecrows to individuals to get recognition that those supplies have been delivered. You can find those agreements at alicat.org/community-relations. When you're addressing people's concerns, I find it's really important to drill down to the root issue. I've had a number of people complain, and when you really ask them questions, it's more about a neighborhood dispute rather than it really being about the cats. And it's more kind of a way to get back at the person because the neighbor who maybe has a concern is complaining about another neighbor. How do you try and pull the stress off the cats and put it back on what the actual issue at hand is and resolving those issues?
I think that one of the things that really helps is having a third party come in. Because you have two people who don't like each other, and as you said, a lot of it's due to the fact that they've had a dispute in the past. So having two of them communicate is not going to work. So to have someone go to the neighbor who has an issue and just explain that you're there to help resolve any issues and that you are not siding with anyone. You're there to help the cats, but also to help them with their issues. And then obviously to go back to the neighbor with the cats and try and get them to cooperate.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of times it does get to an escalated situation before you know, someone's able to intercede. What steps would you take to preempt issues from escalating to avoid the confrontation at all?
I think one of the things that is important to do is to let everyone know that they're on the same page. They're all there to make the neighborhood a good place to live in. I think some people who have issues with the cats think that people who care for cats are crazy and want to have like 1,000 cats in the neighborhood, which is really not the case in 99.9% of the cases. I would also say that on the other hand, I think sometimes people who care for cats have a misconception. If someone says something about your cats, they're evil and they hate your cats and they're there to kill them. And I think what they have to understand is that a lot of people do not have proper understanding of cats. If you've never dealt with a feral cat before, there are a lot of things that don't make sense to you. And a lot of people, for example, don't even know that most feral cats are killed when they go into shelters. So they think that if they lodge a complaint with animal control, the cat goes to what I call cat Disneyland. You know, they'll be adopted, they'll live somewhere nice. They don't have an understanding the cat would be killed.
Right.
It is surprising how many people actually change their attitude when they know that's what happens.
That's definitely a call that we get at Alley Cat Allies very frequently. Once we're able to kind of say, you know, these cats aren't adoptable. If you take them to the shelter, they're going to be killed.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you really want to be responsible for making that, you know, for making that call?
Right.
And a lot of times you're right. They'll be much more understanding. They're much more willing to work with you on deterrence because they don't, you know, they don't want the cat killed. They just don't necessarily want it using your garden as a litter box.
Exactly.
So definitely that can make a big difference. When you're brought into a dispute to play the role of a facilitator, how do you approach the situation?
The first thing I go in and I tell everyone is that we're not taking sides here. I like to talk to both sides separately. It's not a good idea to meet them together because there's a lot of accusations flying back and forth. So it's good to make appointments to meet them on separate occasions. It's fine to do on the same day, but just not together. And then speak to both sides and find out what they see the issue to be. You'll find sometimes that there were like points of misunderstanding. For example, a lot of people will not understand that the cats were sterilized. And you can then go over to the person who has an issue with the cats and say, well, she's been feeding them because she's trying to get them sterilized. And when they hear that, that does change their perception because they don't understand that. And the person who's caring for the cats may not have communicated that properly.
I think another important thing to mention is that when you bring in a third party, it's important that they understand feral cat issues. They're not siding with the caregiver or, you know, the other party,
absolutely,
but they definitely have an understanding because you don't want someone coming in and making rash decisions and kind
right.
of everyone's agreed to go with what the facilitator says and then, you know, kind of stuff gets even
right.
taken to a higher
right.
level.
Right.
So kind of there's a lot of different roles that people can play, you know, trapping, caregiving, and then also we kind of see community relations as kind of this separate entity that's part of Trap Neuter Return. If you're having a local dispute and need help with a facilitator or a third party, try looking on our Feral Friends for local people who could help. You can find a list of those at alleycat.org/response. So when you go in to be a facilitator, kind of what are you looking for from each side?
I think what's important as a facilitator is to make sure that you come up with an agreement that both sides can live with. I think you mentioned earlier, which is a very good point, that a facilitator's job is not to go in and tell everybody this is the law. They should go in, hear both sides, and come to an agreement that both sides are able to live with, basically. A facilitator should also always, always try and keep their temper. It is not going to help anybody if you lose your temper, and I've dealt with some really annoying complainants, but I have to say that if you lose your temper, just remember that the cats are going to be in that much more jeopardy. Take a deep breath and walk out of the room if you need to and come back in when you've calmed down.
I think that's also a good point to make, is that it's not always, the caregivers aren't always doing everything right. I mean, they definitely have great intentions. We're glad they're doing what they're doing. But I helped facilitate part of a dispute at a university where the caregiver was actually feeding the cats on the steps of one of the buildings.
Right.
And it was simply, you know, moving the feeding station around to the back of the building,
right,
and all the problems were gone.
Right,
but
right.
She just didn't understand, you know, she kind of, tempers were raised, she got a little bit, you
right.
know, everything just escalated, honestly, until it was like, well, they don't want the cats here, and
right.
they are just attacking me personally, when honestly, it was just a simple
solution.
You know, simple solution that just somebody needed to come in and see that from an outside point of view. So I think that was a good point to make.
You made a very good observation as well, that sometimes it's important to go in objectively. So I would suggest as well, going down and checking the area out without letting people know you're going. You made a very good point that the caregiver had not told you that the food had been left on the doorstep. And you're going to find a lot of things like that. You're going to hear from the caregiver that they're being picked on when actually, as you said, despite their good intentions, they may not be doing everything right. And they're not going to tell you that. So again, from the other side, you're going to have people with issues with the cats who are not going to tell you everything either. So it's good to go down and get an objective viewpoint. And then you can come back with better knowledge and you can sort of help facilitate a resolution better.
For a list of caregiver guidelines suggested by Alicat Allies, please visit alicat.org/colonycare. Can you give us an example of an experience that you helped work through that might be able to help others?
One of the situations that I remember being one of the more successful cases was a condominium dispute. There had been a lady there who had been feeding the cats and not sterilizing them. And she would come out at like 4 o'clock in the morning and feed the cats. The colony kept growing. It became 30 and then 35 and the colony kept growing. And the management kept trapping the cats and having them killed. So a few people in the condominium found out about it and decided that they were gonna help institute a TNR program and that they would mediate. So I went down with them to talk to the management, and they told us that they had been spending about $2,000 or $3,000 every year having the cats trapped and killed.
Wow, that is ridiculous.
I know, and they said, you know, they had called for a quote and each cat caught would be $20. So they decided that this would actually be cheaper. So they decided to use the fund allocated that year and get the money set aside for TNR on the basis that they would review this in 6 months. And we did that. The cats were actually all done. They were sterilized. The colony was managed. The lady who had been feeding was sort of brought into the fold and taught how to do it properly. And as a result, the condominium ended up having a really good impression when we went back to see them. The management, the residents committee had noticed a decrease in the number of cats, and the complaints fell as well.
That's great. I think it's always really important to stay professional and have a very professional demeanor when you're working in those kinds of situations. A lot of times people will think maybe it'd be cute to wear their cat t-shirt,
right, exactly,
or something
yeah.
like that. But obviously, you know, when I go to that type of thing, I always wear business attire so that I'm taken very seriously in when I'm giving advice on what should be done, and I don't get over emotional and don't get overly invested in the situation so that I appear that I am objective, which I am, trying to make the best situation for the cats.
I think that you brought a really good point, which is that I've known people who've gone into meetings. They've, you know, a lot of them are professionals, as you know. They've gone in their business attire, come in with their laptops, done like little PowerPoint presentations, and given out their business cards afterwards, so that whomever you're speaking to, they realize that you have a good job, you know, you're responsible, you're not going to run off and do something crazy. And on the flip side, I've actually gone to meetings where people burst out crying, clutched at the sleeve of the official who was in charge, and called him like a cat killer.
Wow.
So that didn't go so good.
Yeah, probably an example of what not to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Alicat Allies sometimes recommends having agreements written up for particularly property management situations or something, when you're going to say that when a trap, neuter, return group or an individual says that they're going to provide certain things for you know, a property management or even just a neighbor, that they kind of have a written agreement so that all expectations are known of each other. Do you support that? Do you think that that's a good idea as well?
That's a great idea. I would also suggest keeping a track of all, try and put everything down in email or letter so that you have a trail of correspondence. You don't want to really be talking to someone and then, you know, 6 months down the line, you disagree about what was said. Now, I realize that sometimes you're going to have phone conversations with somebody. So when you get back home, you know, write it down a note or an email and send it to that person and say, well, as we discussed, this was what was said. If they don't disagree, then you can say, well, you know, I sent you this email and this is what happened on such and such a date.
I know you've done a lot of facilitating and a lot of community relations. Have you had any situations that turned out remarkably well, where someone who was kind of really against the cat kind of turned all the way around and was for the cats?
Well, the person I am thinking of wasn't mean. He didn't want the cats killed, and that was the first thing he said, but he really did not want them in his garden. So we went down, and as you say, we used an acknowledgement form, got him to sign off that he had borrowed a scarecrow and a cat stop, and it was my policy when I was with Cat Welfare to collect a deposit as well. So what happened was he contacted us a few weeks later and said that the devices had worked really well, and he wanted to donate the deposit to us, and then he went out and bought, I think, 4 more scarecrows and a cat stop for himself, and he gave me a lot of feedback, what worked well, what didn't work well, and he's never had a problem since.
When you're talking with people, how do you make sure that you get the full story?
I find it useful to take notes, and because very often people are telling you the story, and they tell you the things that are most important to them. So it could be, the cats got caught, and they were really mean to me. They don't really tell you everything in a chronological order. It does help to ask people to tell you the situation in a chronological order and tell, you know, when did the dispute start? What was the first argument or disagreement you had with your neighbor, for example? What caused that? And a lot of times you're going to find that it wasn't the cats. For example, a lot of people are not able to articulate what the actual problem is to you. And the problem might be that, and this has happened several times to me, where there was a dispute between family members. And then it became, well, I don't like your cats too. And then they complained about the cats. So it's very useful to go back and try and get that information to find out what the actual issue is, because you might actually solve what is really a non-issue with the cats and find that there's still a dispute.
Do you find you have to ask multiple questions to kind of drag information out of people?
Yes, and I often tell people, right, and you go back like 5 steps for me. Tell me what happened like 5 days ago or whatever. You know, how, if you're telling me she just yelled at me, you know, what caused her to yell at you? Did she just randomly yell at you? And it rarely happens that way. It usually escalates slowly. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that people may not realize is that as you mentioned earlier, by the time it escalates to a certain point, there's been a lot of small incidents that have led up to this. So if you could actually kind of catch it at an early stage, you're going to have a much easier job. It's rare that neighbors start out hating each other. There have probably been like weeks or months before that where there were like minor irritations. And if you could catch it at that point, your neighbor is going to be so much easier to work with. So deal with it early. Don't wait until they're like calling animal control and they're coming to try and trap your cats.
I think that another important thing to note is that though every situation has kind of different intricacies,
right,
these all basically follow the same pattern.
Right.
Every situation involving the cats, really there's a certain set number of kind of solutions that you can go down and kind of check those off your list. And as you go down, you kind of see which category these situations fall into. So that's really important to keep in mind as you do more and more facilitating and helping the other people in your community.
I think what's also important is to always try and maintain good relationships with neighbors right from the beginning. If you're feeding in a building, if you're feeding on a lot, try and acknowledge the people there. I think we recently dealt with the case that one of the issues that the people had was that they felt that they had been ignored by the caregivers who were coming onto their property to feed the cats. It doesn't hurt to bring over some cake one day or biscuits or whatever it is. I've actually known a caregiver who lives next to a person who doesn't like cats. But she's like become such good friends with this neighbor that the neighbor actually looks out for the cats for her when she's away on vacation.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and it's just because they're such, you know, they're such good neighbors, and she's been such a good neighbor that the woman who doesn't really like the cats would not go against the cats because you're a good neighbor.
Right, and that would kind of hurt their personal relationship.
Right.
Right, that's definitely. We've definitely suggested that people, you know, pick up stuff at farmers markets and just
bring
it to their neighbor, just drop a note. Even if you're not the most outgoing people person, it's even easy to just kind of drop a note and just say, you know, thank you, or even just leaving information about the cat so that they know that obviously someone is caring for them.
Right. You don't want your first interaction to be a negative one. You want to be a positive one so that they are more likely to come and talk to you if they do have an issue.
It's also great for those instances to keep a record of your cats so that you have all their medical records. You can show that they're
Absolutely.
Vaccinated. You can show everything so that if a neighbor ever does have a concern, you don't have to try and pull all that stuff together.
Right.
You can just walk over and say, oh, well, I've actually have pictures of all the cats. These are all their names. This is, you know, all their vaccination history. They're all spayed and neutered, you know, because that kind of puts a situation at ease kind of before it escalates into something bigger.
That's a really good point as well, because I think a lot of caregivers do not realize the importance of keeping records. I realize they're very busy and that they have a lot to do, but it doesn't help if the complaint is the number of cats has increased, and when you speak to the caregiver, he or she has no idea. They think there may be 30 cats, it might be 50, they might have started with 60, but they don't know. You need to have that information at your fingertips so that if someone comes to you and says the population has increased, you can immediately say, no, actually, it's gone down, or no, it's stabilized since I started managing this colony.
Right, definitely. Very important to keep records. Well, Dawn, I'd really like to thank you for joining us today. I think that a lot of people will learn from things that you've been able to share. And I'd like to invite everyone to go to our website at alleycat.org/communityrelations for more information.
Thank you.